A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome in episode 45 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. I'm Tyler Yaremchuk with Cam Lewis once again. And Cam, that was, I don't even know really how to describe this series. My initial thought, especially after they had split kind of the first two games, was like, all right, it wasn't pretty, but they found a way to get the job done. And then they kind of did what they did in the last two games of the series. And it's like, okay, they clearly dominated the Orioles for like a solid last two of those games, at least, but you could argue even the second game as well. How would you describe what we saw over the last 3 days?
I don't even know what that was. That was weird. That was nuts. The first game on Friday was a nightmare. I mean, that was some of the most bothered I've been by a Blue Jays game in a while, which is, you know, shocking because they've had some pretty dreadful losses this season, undoubtedly. And I mean, we're in a great stretch, so it's like pretty much good vibes all around. But like doing what you did against Oakland and New York and then having the streak end the way it did in Baltimore really sucks. And then the next two games in the doubleheader were just like, they damn near lost both those games. Yeah. So it's like they're a couple of, you know, different at-bats away from losing the first three games of this series. And then who knows if Sunday's game happens. And then Sunday's game happens and they scored fucking 22 runs. They scored like, what?
Over a four-inning span, if you go from the last inning of game three to the first three innings of game four, they scored 27 runs in four innings. Like, it's just, it was absolutely bananas. It was, I was watching the game with some buddies on Sunday and it was like they were hitting batting practice. Yeah. It was like, Hard base hit, double off the fence, home run. And like just this insane cycle of that. And you're right. It was weird. It was one of the more unique weekends of baseball I think I've ever witnessed, just because, like you said, we now walk away from that series feeling great, going, yeah, the Blue Jays beat the fucking wheels off the Baltimore Orioles. But damn it, they were, as you said, and it, you said it perfectly, they were a couple of at-bats going differently away from losing three straight to Baltimore. So I'm torn because right now I still love this team and love what's going on. And how could you not? They're in a wild card spot. They're one game up on the Yankees. But when you kind of take a step back, you go, oh fuck, they almost really blew it.
Yeah, I think the thing to take here is that, especially in September, there really is no such thing as an easy or automatic win. Like we've really told ourselves these Baltimore and also the Minnesota games coming up are, they're automatic. They've already been won. They're just a formality. That's not the case. Like, I'm not really sure whether the whole, oh, this team has something to play for, so, you know, they're calm and feeling good, you know, they're playing above because of that, or they're proving a point. I don't know if that's actually accurate, but I think there is something to that. I mean, when you're the Orioles, you're a bunch of mediocre guys on a team just trying to play for a gig next season, right? And there's no pressure. Who gives a fuck? But especially when you're on the road too, right? Like, there's no such thing as an automatic win. So the Jays really can't let off the gas at all these next 3 weeks. And I'm sure that in their clubhouse, they are aware of that. They know that when they go into Baltimore, like they just did, or they go into Minnesota, or they play these mediocre teams, they have to do exactly what they did, which is, you know, beat the fucking piss out of the other team. They can't let up at all. There's no room for error. And I mean, no win is going to be easy. And I think we learned that this weekend.
Let's get into three up, three down and go a little bit deeper into this four-game set between the Jays and Orioles. It's brought to you by Twig and Berries. Check them out, twigandberries.ca, wherever you are in Canada. If your order is $75 or more, you get free shipping. And because you listen to this podcast and you know the promo code is Nation15, you also get 15% off. Let's start with the ups because they won this series. They took 3 out of 4. That is what we kind of set as the minimum expectation for this series. But still, we'll start with the ups because we are feeling good. And I like this one that you wrote down to kick things off. The outing from Nate Pearson in the first game of that doubleheader, it was not a great start from Hyunjin Ryu, to say the least. He didn't even get out of the third inning. We'll have more on that in a second. But Nate Pearson comes in, pitches 2 innings, gives up 1 hit. He walked a pair as well, but he struck out a couple. He held the score where it was, and that allowed them to come back in the 7th inning. But Pearson gets a lot of credit for being able to come in and sort of put some water on the fire.
Yeah, so Ryu and then Ross Stripling. Stripling came in to kind of mop things up and give them some length. He didn't do that. So Ryu went 2 1/3, allowed 7 earned runs, one of his worst outings we've ever seen as a Blue Jay. It was a complete mess. Stripling came in, you know, he had been good before he went on the injured list, came back, he wasn't good at all. And then, so those guys pretty much, they just got like lit up. It was, you know, 10 earned runs against Baltimore in like 4 innings. And then Pearson comes in, 2 shutout innings. And that's ultimately what gave them the chance to come back, because I think, yeah, they scored. Yeah, it was 6 runs from the beginning of when Pearson came in. So when he first came in, they were down. Baltimore had 10 and Toronto had, that would have been what, 5? Yeah, so they were down like 10-5 and Pearson came in and it was like, you're playing fucking Baltimore. I mean, the Orioles, they can hit. They're not a bad hitting team, but their weakness is their pitching. So the key was, let's make sure this doesn't turn into 15-5. Let's just keep this at 10-5, because then they're a huge inning away from coming back. And that's exactly what happened. That's Pearson showed in that game exactly what we all hoped when we talked about him coming up and joining the bullpen, which was, this guy can be a weapon, not just for one inning like most of their relievers, but he can toss 2 good innings, and that makes a game so much shorter. It makes life so much easier.
So far since he's come up and rejoined the Blue Jays, it's been 4 outings for Nate Pearson. He pitched twice against Oakland, once against the Yankees, and then once against the Orioles. And 2 of those 4 outings, he didn't give up a single run. One of them, he gave up 1 earned against Oakland. Then he did give up 2 earned against the Yankees back on September 9th. But it's been positive, in my opinion. Like, even, you know, the 2 outings where he gave up runs, like, I wasn't too concerned. Like, there's going to be still a little bit of growing pains here. And I think the expectation would be that as we go a little bit further down the stretch here and Pearson continues to get into games on a regular basis, I would only expect his numbers to improve as he gets more confident at the major league level.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the outing he had in New York is, I think, the one that made people pretty anxious. He came in the final game when they completed the sweep to kind of mop it up a bit, and he allowed 2 home runs, and everybody was like, oh geez, like, I don't think I want to see Nate Pearson in a high leverage spot. He's allowing home runs. But we've also seen Jordan Romano do that.
Yeah.
Romano was allowing home runs against Oakland. Like,
and the Jays offense just bailed them out.
Yeah. And that's, it is what it is. Like, you're a fireball pitcher. You're going to allow home runs. It's Major League Baseball in 2021, but the more reps Pearson gets, the better, because he can be a huge game changer for this team's bullpen.
He did walk 2 against Baltimore, which is concerning. The first time since he's been recalled that he's walked a batter. So that's maybe the one thing I would keep an eye on in his next start, is if he can get the control kind of back to where he needs it. But regardless, a really, really positive outing from Pearson in game 1 of the doubleheader. And then in game 1 of the doubleheader, with the Blue Jays down to their final out, George Springer does it again. A clutch home run to deep left field. The celebration, they're fired up. It felt like that home run against the Red Sox all over again, right? Just incredible stuff. And they desperately needed that. And Buck said it on the call, or maybe it was Pat, but like 80% of George Springer is still pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I was looking at the team stats today on Baseball Reference. And it's wild to see, like, it feels like Springer's been around for more than he has. He only played 59 games and he has a 920 OPS. Like, when he's been playing, he's been really good. And it really feels like he's been playing more, because he's come up with so many big moments, right? Like, when he's in the lineup, the team looks so different. And that's, I mentioned that on a podcast, I think, I don't know, it must've been in June or something. We were talking about him when he was on the injured list. And I said, you'll see the value of Springer when they're late in the season and the pressure is high, because he's one of those guys who is going to come through, and that's what he's done. I mean, we have that Red Sox go-ahead home run. That was, you know, insane, arguably the biggest, the best moment from the season still, despite what we've seen in these past few weeks. Like, maybe it was. And then there was this in Baltimore. Like, that's like a huge game changer. Like, if they had lost those first two games of the series, that's so deflating. And then you go into the second game and you're, you know, burnt out and tired from playing, and you've just lost two to Baltimore. It's like, fuck that. And then, you know, Springer hits this two-out home run. That's such a game changer. Like, it's exactly what they signed this guy for. And it's just sick to have it in the lineup.
Yeah, 100%. You go back to even earlier in that inning as well. Corey Dickerson drew a walk, and then Lourdes Gurriel hit a single. And that's that. Those two at-bats are really what kind of started the rally there for the Toronto Blue Jays. And that'll tie nicely to our third point. But before we get to Lourdes Gurriel going nuclear, there was another big home run in the second half of that seven-inning doubleheader, and it was Bo Bichette. Once again, Jays in their final at-bats of the game, trailing to the Baltimore Orioles, and Bichette finds a way to step up and come through in the clutch. Now, it got a little bit forgotten about because they ended up scoring fucking 11 in that inning. But that started with a Bo Bichette home run, and that's one of those at-bats, like you said off the top of the podcast. If that Bichette at-bat goes a different way and he pops out or strikes out, they maybe don't put up 11 in that inning.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, it was that, again, was the game changer there. It was Vladdy hits a single to lead things off on the first pitch at the top of the seventh inning to break up that no hitter.
Like, yeah, they were getting no hit.
What? Yeah, they're getting no hit. Vladdy hits a single, then Bo comes up three pitches later and it's gone. The Jays are suddenly winning the game. And the funny thing about, like, Bo is we talk so much about, you know, Vladdy and, you know, MVP caliber season, triple crown watch, amazing stuff. Marcus Semien, same thing, probably going to finish like top five in MVP voting, maybe even higher than that. George Springer, like, he's been injured, but when he's playing, holy shit, clutch hits left, right, and center. And nobody really talks much about Bo Bichette at all. I think the general sentiment has been, oh, geez, this has been like an okay season for him. He strikes out so much. His defense is mediocre. But like, this guy's a shortstop who's 23, who has an 806 OPS with 23 home runs, 87 RBIs. I mean, it's a ridiculously good season for a shortstop. And he's coming up in moments like this and hitting, you know, like game-winning home runs like that. And they just have so many guys in the lineup who can do so many good things. It's absolutely insane. And now they're the first time all year, like, all of these guys are clicking at the same time.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, yeah, Bo Bichette, he doesn't get talked about a ton, but I mean, this guy's top 10 in the American League when it comes to batting average. And he's also hit 23 home runs this year. He's been a huge part of this offense. And like you said, everything's clicking at the same time right now. And one of the guys that's certainly humming along pretty good is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Dan Schulman with a tweet. In Gurriel's first 61 games of the season, he was batting .249, had just six home runs and 22 RBIs. In his last 66 games, he's batting .318 with 13 home runs and 56 RBIs. Schulman would add that during this stretch, he is in the top four in the majors in slugging, OPS, and RBI. Earlier in the year, there was some conversation about, you know, if the Jays want to be a contending team in the years to come, can they be a contending team with a guy like Lourdes Gurriel in the lineup on a regular basis? And I saw people who were saying no, and I didn't really get it. Like, if he's hitting 7, 8, 9 in your order, which he is for the most part, that's fine by me. You can have one spot in your lineup that's just dedicated to a guy who's a little bit of a streaky hitter. And he's not bad in the field. I know he makes the odd gaffe, but even in this series against Baltimore, his arm is so good. And like I said, I understand he makes the odd gaffe with the glove, but the amount of times this series against Baltimore, I think I counted three and I missed the first game of the series. I didn't watch that one live. I watched Jason 30 on that, but I counted three times where he cut off a ball hard and got it into second, and it prevented a double. It held a guy at first base. I think there's value in having a guy like Gurriel in your lineup, obviously. And I think this is absolutely a guy who you can have in your playing every single day and be competing for a World Series with.
Yeah, this is the game changer for the Jays, is when they get guys like this going. It's, I think, you know, pretty much when they're healthy, it's going to be, you know, Springer, Vlad, Bo, Semien, Teoscar. That's your five. It's going to be very good. There aren't many teams who can match that 1 through 5. And then the key is for them to go from very good to like elite to like 2015 level or beyond. Then you need, you know, Alejandro Kirk in the lineup hitting. You need Gurriel hitting. And then, you know, it really is like, I always tend to bring up this when I compare it to the 2015. It's like, he's like the Chris Colabello, right? Like in 2015, you had Bautista, Encarnacion, Donaldson, Tulowitzki. That's your big four. Like, that's huge. That's amazing. And then suddenly you add Colabello, who comes out of nowhere and gets super hot. And that just lengthens the lineup, right? Yeah. And that's pretty much exactly what Gurriel is doing here. He's hitting fucking everything. And he's, you know, the other key too, is you look at his splits from earlier on to now, and now he's walking a whole bunch more. Like that game against Baltimore, he was taking walks.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. Like, this lineup becomes so much longer when you have a guy like this hitting, and it's, let's hope that he like does this streak for like the rest of the season, because when this guy's hot, it's absolutely fucking insane.
He is also now he holds the franchise record for most grand slams in a season, which I'm not sure if there is anything to that. But he is clearly not fazed when the bases are loaded.
No.
It's partially luck, but congratulations to Lourdes Gurriel for holding on to that honor. Cause he cranked out another one in this series against Baltimore.
He's all the way up to like an 802 OPS for the season, which is like, I remember there was times in like June and July when his OPS was like in the 600s. So like this streak that he's gone on, holy fuck.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insane. He's also now, I think he's top 20 in the majors or in the American League when it comes to batting average as well. Like he's gotten his numbers up to a point like beyond respectable, beyond just like average. Like he's got really, really good numbers on the season. He's 15th in batting average, sandwiched right in between Jonathan Scope and JD Martinez. Pretty good company for Lourdes Gurriel. All right, let's get to the downs here, because like we said, there were some not great moments in this series, and it started back in game one when Robbie Ray, in contention for a Cy Young, he got hit pretty hard. He gave up 8 hits over 4 1/3. He allowed 3 earned runs. He still managed to strike out 8, but he gave up a couple of long balls and he walked a couple, which, I mean, is rare that we even see him walk a couple now at this point from Robbie Ray. But not a great start from Robbie Ray. Cam, are you concerned or is this just a blip?
I don't know actually how I feel about this. This is weird because I'm looking at Ray's worst starts of the year and there have not been very many. I mean, no. Like his worst outings have been 3 different times he's allowed 4 runs. He hasn't allowed more than 4 runs once. So damn near everything this year has been a quality start. And I'm looking at, there's 3 instances where he didn't go, he didn't reach 5 innings. One was in May on the second leg of a doubleheader. And that was against the Yankees, when 4 2/3 allowed 4 earned runs. And then these other 2 games, 4 1/3, both against Baltimore, both in Baltimore. So there was that one that just happened. He went 4 1/3, allowed 8 hits, walked a couple guys, still he struck out 8 guys. So he was still striking out a bunch of guys, and he allowed 3 earned runs. So it wasn't that bad. It was pretty bad, but it wasn't that bad. And then there was the one, it was in June the 18th. He went again 4 1/3, 6 hits, 2 earned runs, struck out 5 guys. It's weird. It's odd that the Orioles of all teams kind of have Robbie Ray's number. And it's also odd that both of these times came in Baltimore too. I wonder, it makes you think.
So there was not that we're here to, you know, spread conspiracy theories and whatnot, but there was something along the lines of an eyebrow raise going on online when it comes to this, correct?
Yeah, there was. So this kind of ties into our next point. So we'll run through the second down, which was Orioles manager Brian Hyde freaking the fuck out and there being a hot mic. And I mean, this was hilarious, like just from like an entertainment standpoint. Yeah. Like you're just sitting there watching the game and it's like, okay, like Robbie Ray's not pitching very well. This kind of sucks. Like, what the fuck? And then all of a sudden you just hear like, fuck you, Robbie, get on the fucking mound. And this guy's just shouting and you're like, where is this coming from? Like when I first heard it, I thought there was a fan yelling. That's what I thought. It was picking up that. And I was like, okay, well, like there's a hot mic and a fan screaming by the booth. And then Sportsnet panned on Baltimore's dugout and it just shows Brian Hyde like at the top of the stairs, like bitching out Robbie Ray. And Robbie Ray's like, he's shouting back at him, like, what the fuck are you talking about? So apparently what was going on was what I saw people mention on Twitter was that there was some kind of speculation that there was a noise coming from Baltimore's bench every time Ray was throwing a slider. And the slider, as we know, is very key weapon for Ray. It's kind of his wipeout pitch. So maybe they knew that was coming, and that's what kind of helped them hit the way they did. And maybe that's something that was also going on back in June when they played them, and that was also a really bad start this season. Maybe. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying that's what the speculation was. And it just, it kind of adds up a little bit because Baltimore's manager seemed weirdly defensive for a mid-September game when the Orioles have won like 13 times this season. It doesn't matter at all.
I'm a little torn on this. Like, do I think the 46 or however many games they fucking won at this point, Baltimore Orioles are capable of stealing signs? I mean, sure, I guess they're capable of it, but like, why would they be doing it now? Like, do they have a beef with strictly Robbie Ray? Are there other pitchers they're doing this with? Are they testing out systems for next season? I don't know. I don't know if they're stealing signs. I don't know if I necessarily buy that. But I could understand Robbie Ray's frustration. And I mean, if you're Brandon Hyde, you're managing the 46 win Baltimore Orioles. Maybe just fucking cool it. Like,
well, that's where the anger comes from.
I guess like you're frustrated with how the season's going, but like, I don't know, man, you're 43 games back of the division lead. You're how many games back are they? They're 34 games back of the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, maybe you don't want to be picking fights with a guy who's better than every single pitcher in your organization. So it was all weird to me. Like Robbie Ray doing the like faint, like, you know, it's curious they weren't swinging at my slider. I don't know if I love that. Like, dude, you got lit up by the fucking Orioles. Maybe you should also just cool it a little bit. But like Brandon Hyde as well, like, just shut the fuck up, man. Like, your team's garbage. You ended up getting lit up in the series, which was hilarious as well, because in the three games since Brandon Hyde decided to stand on the dugout and yell at Robbie Ray, his team gave up a total of 44 runs, and two of them were seven inning ball games as well. So it could have been worse, Brandon Hyde. The whole situation is just weird to me. I don't even really know how else to describe it.
I really wish I was there at that game to hear that live and kind of get a view, because I would have liked to see what Toronto's bench looked like during that. They didn't really pan over to them during the broadcast. I imagine there's a reason they didn't do that. I'm actually shocked the broadcast leaned in as close to show what Hyde was doing, because I know they're usually pretty conservative with people shouting and swearing and stuff like that, which is a damn shame because it's so entertaining. But yeah, there was another thing people were kind of complaining about was people thought Charlie Montoyo should have gotten in the mix there. I don't know if that's the right play. Like, a lot of people were saying, and I mean, I was joking about this in the Blue Jays Nation account as well. I was like, oh, Charlie should go over there and smash fucking Hyde's ass like a pair of bongo drums. But realistically, no. Like, you don't want to get your guys that worked up in the first game of a four-game series. The last thing you want is a brawl and for someone to get kicked out or suspended, right? Like, yeah. I think Charlie was probably right in finding some chill.
And I think so as well. Like, it's... Yeah. A big part of a manager's job, you know, manage the emotions of your team a little bit, right? And I think in that situation, I'm with you 100%. Like, there's no reason to go and lose your cool on Brandon Hyde so the rest of your team is unnecessarily fired up. Like, again, if you're the Jays, and I think this is kind of the approach they maybe took, it's you guys are the Baltimore Orioles. You're not even really worth our time right now. And they ended up showing that in the final three games of the series as well. Yeah. The last down we have here, the first two, Robbie Ray batting game one, Hyde spazzing out, and then Ryu and Stripling were also bad in the next one. Like, the Jays have been getting good pitching for a while here now. Like, you go back to that series against the Yankees where in four games they only gave up a total of 8 runs, never mind their starters being better than that. But they didn't get good pitching in this series against Baltimore. Even in the finale, I know that they were bringing in like Trent Thornton, but I mean, Steven Matz still gave up 5 earned. Like, there's a lot of guys we could throw into this third down category as bad pitching outings.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to look. The only good start the team got was Thomas Hatch's spot start. And even he was walking the tightrope the whole time. Like, he wasn't great. I mean, Ray had his arguably his worst outing of the season. Then Hyunjin Ryu just got fucking lit. He went 2 1/3, allowed 8 hits, 7 earned runs, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, 2 dingers. And I mean, yeah, like this does kind of tie back to the same thing. Like, oh man, like maybe Baltimore knew what was coming, but not really. Like, you just didn't look good at all. Like, I wouldn't carry the conspiracy into game two, that's for sure, because he was missing spots. He was, velocity was down, like, just looked very, very, very hittable. And Yeah, since the beginning of August, it's been like a real roller coaster ride with Ryu, which is unfortunate because, yeah, it's 8 starts, 6.48 ERA. And I mean, it's kind of up and down here. Like, you have this start against Cleveland at the beginning of the month, 7 innings, 2 earned runs. And his next time out against Boston, 3 2/3, 7 earned runs. An okay start against Seattle, a great start against Detroit, 7 innings shutout. Terrible start against the White Sox, 3 2/3, 7 earned runs. Okay start against Baltimore, 5 2/3, 3 earned runs. Great start against the Yankees, 6 innings, no earned runs. Then this against Baltimore. So the question now becomes, this is a really different pitcher when he has rest and when he doesn't. I mean, look kind of at his good starts and it seems, okay, he has a little bit more time in between. So now if the Jays have more pitching options, maybe the play is to make sure that he has 5 days off in between each start. Because if he doesn't, he's not good. Right?
Yeah. I mean, and maybe you just need to make sure you're also timing it where like Stripling or Pearson are like one of those two need to be rested and ready to go like 3 innings, but maybe a bit of load management is the way to handle Ryu down the stretch here. And you just kind of go, listen, like, hey, you're throwing 80 pitches a game here, and that's a hard out until we get to the postseason. And then maybe that's how you have to handle it. But it certainly is concerning. That was 3 Up, 3 Down, brought to you by Twig and Berries. Use that promo code Nation15 to get yourself 15% off. I actually want to share another down. This is more personal, though. I'm going to be in Toronto next weekend to watch that series against the Twins on Saturday and Sunday. And I was all fired up. Like, as someone who obviously doesn't get to see very many live Toronto Blue Jays baseball games, I've been fired up about this for a few weeks. I went and I did the math and I like counted out the games and the starts as for who I was going to get to see pitch. And last time we talked, I was fired up because I'm like, man, coming in on Saturday, Sunday, it's Manoah and it's Barrios. This is going to be sick. But the fact that they gave a spot start to Thomas Hatch now means I get Steven Matz on the Saturday. And I'm not very excited to watch Steven Matz pitch. Would have much rather gotten Manoah Barrios.
Well, you still get Manoah on Sunday, right?
I'll get Manoah on Sunday and that'll be all good. That'll be fun. But I mean,
there you go. It's not that bad.
Still, I'm complaining about the fact.
Steven Matz is fine.
But Barrios, man, Barrios. I'm salty. I'm salty about the spot start for Thomas Hatch for nothing more than just personal reasons. It made total sense. Like we said, keep the pitchers rested. But for me personally, come on, let's rush this up a little bit.
Immediately contradict the point you just made.
I don't even care. Like no, I said, it's all personal.
Yeah, it's all personal. It's never easy for you, hey?
It's not.
Never easy.
I would have been pissed the other way around. If they wouldn't have given it to Hatch, I would have been like, listen, this makes no sense. But for me personally, this is a great move.
Yeah, bonus up. You get to watch Barrios and Manoah, but the team had a meltdown because they weren't starting guys properly, blah, blah, blah. Anyway,
you want to go through some of this other stuff you have here? Because you had some pretty interesting stats that I want you to share.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of cool stats. And I'm sure if you're on Twitter, Reddit, whatever, they've been shared 9 million times, but I'm going to say them out loud. The Blue Jays were the first team ever to hit go-ahead homers in the last inning and win both games of a doubleheader. So those back-to-back comebacks on Saturday were the Blue Jays making history. So that was super cool. 22 runs on Sunday was the second most in a game in franchise history, and 47 runs in the series was the most in a 4-game series in franchise history. 27 runs between the 7th inning on Saturday and the first three innings on Sunday was the most in a 4-inning span in MLB history.
Wow.
So that's
wow.
A handful of interesting records the Blue Jays set these last couple of days. It just kind of is a testament to what we just witnessed.
We're going to remember this series for a really, really long time, I think. Just the offensive output. It's also the sort of sad explanation point on just how shitty this year's Orioles team is, which is also kind of funny. But it shows when this lineup is hitting as well as they are, if you're going to throw out like AAA level pitching to them, they're going to beat the wheels off you. And that's exactly what it was in this series. Something else here, the out-of-town scoreboard went great for the Toronto Blue Jays. And Boston lost on Sunday. The Yankees lost to the Mets. And that's now put them in a situation where they're tied with the Red Sox, which is huge. Because, I mean, I would love to have that wild card game in Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Forget talking about just making that wild card game. Let's host it as well, like we did back in 2016. They're now also a game up on the New York Yankees. So, again, the Toronto Blue Jays are going to control their own fate here down the stretch. Yeah. If you win out, guess what? You're in the playoffs. The Oakland A's now sit three back, as do the Seattle Mariners. I'm not even really thinking about those two very much anymore. No. I guess Oakland is still kind of in the hunt and you never know, but we're getting to the point here where there's not that much baseball left in the season here. So really, I think it's a three team race for those final two spots. And if you're the Jays, the way you're playing right now, the schedule you have with 10 games against the Twins and Orioles still to go, you need to be eyeing up that top spot. Like, let's host the thing.
Yeah, and another big thing that the Jays also have going for them is they play the Yankees again at home. The Yankees haven't been in Toronto in 2 years. It's a three-game series. They just swept the Yankees in New York. They seem to have played the Yankees quite well this year. That is a series late in the year in which, I mean, it could go either way, right? Like, you know, they could sink the Yankees completely there, knock them out of a playoff spot, or they could lose their playoff spot to the Yankees. So that's going to be a fascinating one. And then the other challenge, and this is a segue into our last point, is six games against Tampa the rest of the way.
Let's get into up next. It's brought to you by DoorDash, where you can use the promo code BJNPODDD. It gets first-time users of the app 25% off and no delivery fees. DoorDash is a proud sponsor of the entire Nation Network of podcasts. This week is fascinating. Three against the Rays. You get Manoah versus McHugh in the first one, and then Fairbanks as a bulk guy, Barrios versus Rasmussen in the second game, and then Robbie Ray gets to go back on the mound for the series finale. He'll go up against Michael Wacha. We'll get into Jays versus Tampa, but the other thing to keep in mind here is that the Yankees schedule gets easy. They get one against Minnie, they get three against Baltimore, and Boston's going to be playing Seattle. I'm happy that this series isn't happening at the Trop. Next week it will be, though. But this is a massive, massive set for the Jays, especially when you consider what could happen on the out-of-town scoreboard.
Yeah, the Jays... I know we pretty much said like, oh, like if the Jays just win their easy games against Baltimore and Minnesota and they do well in the head to head, they could lose all six to the Rays and it doesn't matter, but you don't want that. Like,
let's not lose all six to the Rays, please.
No, that sucks. Like, fuck that. Like the Rays are good, but they're not that good. Like they're 5-5 in their last 10 games. They're not perfect. Like, you know, their ace is on the injured list for the rest of the season. He's gone. Like, you know, they're doing openers and bulk guys and this and that. Like they're not perfect. The Jays are rolling, kicking the shit out of teams. They just swept the Yankees in Yankee Stadium. They just swept the A's. You know, they just scored 900,000 runs against Baltimore. Blue Jays can win this series at home against Tampa Bay.
Yep.
Tampa Bay is not in a different league than the Blue Jays. Tampa Bay is very good. I think they're the best team in the AL. Yep. But I also think the Jays might be the second best team in the AL. So why not? Go ahead and do these six games against Tampa, three at home, three on the road, go 3-3. They take the goal should be 2 out of 3 here.
I think so as well, especially when you look at the starting pitching matchup, right? Like you got Manoah going up tonight against what's basically kind of like a bullpen day for the Tampa Bay Rays. And I know Fairbanks is good. And then on Sunday as well, you get Robbie Ray going up against Michael Wacha, who is a 5.37 ERA for the Tampa Bay Rays. So like, it's pretty clear or pretty easy to see like a path to two victories here for the Toronto Blue Jays. And I know Wacha has pitched a lot this year. Last time out, he was actually really good, but it was against the Detroit Tigers. He's been lit up though a handful of times this season. So this is a spot. Yeah. 2 out of 3 should be the expectation here for the Toronto Blue Jays as they head home for 3 against the Tampa Bay Rays. We will recap that, of course, and then get you set for another 3 against the Minnesota Twins over the weekend. But a 6-game homestand here where I think, you know, 4-2 is kind of the minimum of what you're expecting here out of the Toronto Blue Jays. And hopefully they can continue to stay in a wild card spot, I think, right? Like if you come out of this 3-game set against the Rays and you're still 1 game up on the Yankees, I'm thrilled with that outcome because I think the Yankees could probably pick up an extra win considering they play some bad teams for 4 straight days here. So if we're recording a pod later on this week and it's Jays in a wild card spot, Yankees 1 back, I'm going to be thrilled.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You want to maintain where you are over the Tampa series and then use the Minnesota series to create some room.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right. That's going to do it for episode 45 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. Shout out to DoorDash. Shout out to our friends at Twig and Berries as well. Also, Coomzee, we're going to have a new sponsor coming on the pod when we talk next. So that'll be exciting. We'll have more on that later in the week. And hopefully it will be an upbeat and positive podcast. And the Jays will have beaten the shit out of the Tampa Bay Rays. For Cam Lewis, I'm Tyler Yarmchuk. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back later in the week.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of podcasts and delivered by DoorDash. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.